Americanworkersradio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome everyone to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As we get together on this Wednesday, July the 10th, the weather is very warm, and I'm going to ask that you stay in a nice air-conditioned room, turn up the radio. In fact, go to your telephone, go to your computer, send a text out to family members and friends, and invite them to tune in to 860 on the AM dial if they live in the Philadelphia tri-state area, or if they're on the internet, just go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And also, if you receive today's announcement in the email, email it to someone else, because I'm hearing more and more good things about people coming up on our radio broadcast as a result of getting something on Facebook, which was also sent out this morning, and our emails. It's things are happening, and they're all great. First of all, I want to say a great big thank you to the people who helped make this broadcast great. And they include Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store. And by the way, Mark and his family are out on a little bit of a leave this week and having a good time. And we wish them the very best. Larkin Connolly, our national small business advocate, always a man with a lot of good things to say, is with us today. Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, a man with many opinions as well, and always enjoy hearing what he has to say. Mr. Curtis Ellis is in California, out on the America First Project, so we'll be looking forward to hearing from him in the very near future. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. Very, very proud and pleased that you tuned in. I want to say it's great to see people in my travels talking about our mission, saving jobs in America, going out of our way to support our local businesses, and going out of our way to support one another. That's the greatest thing that we can do as Americans. And the 4th of July Independence Day festivities, this year we mark the 243rd anniversary of America's independence. And boy, many of the great celebrations were televised. People came out by the thousands and millions across the USA to celebrate this very important day in America's history. And I know that in historic Philadelphia, there were many independence celebrations. I was very happy to be part of them. There was a parade, several festivals, a lot of fireworks, and that all took place to celebrate the greatest country on earth, the United States of America. And I was also pleased to see more good reports about this event than we normally see about things that are happening in America. And I compliment the news media, both local and national, for covering positive things about America on America's 243rd birthday. My request to all of you is let's keep this unity and spirit of the 4th of July going strong throughout the year, because you hear it here on this broadcast. And sometimes we talk about people in one way or another, but our main mission is to support all of the people that are trying to do their best, working age, able-bodied, our seniors, our young people, everybody, to make sure that America is known, understood, and is able to employ the people that need a job and are looking for a job. And also, I want to say that one way that we can all make sure America continues to rise is to go out and spend more of our hard-earned money on the products and services that are being provided by American workers and the businesses that are employing them. One of the biggest things that I hear from the tourists in historic Philadelphia is how many people are employed now in their communities. They're very pleased, very, very pleased. I don't think that most people understand the hardship that the people that were unemployed, on unemployment, on various other programs had gone through during those very difficult 25 years. There are some people in America that suffered over a period of years. They say that we lost a generation of people to unemployment, lack of job skills, lack of job training, lack of availability to the trades in our schools. All these things are starting to change. And it's really great to hear the reports on in the media that large numbers of new jobs are being created right here in the United States of America, and that is in every sector of America's economy. We certainly needed this kind of a shot in the arm, and we are getting it now. So my compliments to everybody who's out there spreading the word and being stingy with their dollar if they can't find something that's made in America. When you go out and you see all the beautiful products lined up on the shelves, and then you start looking at the label, you say, how is America represented? What the hell is going on? Today, I'm seeing more manufacturing growing right here in America. It's really great to see. We're no longer inventing products in America and just contracting them to foreign countries to make the stuff and ship it back over here so we can sell it in our stores. We are now making inventions come to life right here in America's place. It's going to be a long time before we get to that 50-50 balance, but as they say, new management in America has certainly changed a lot of things, and the tide of change is really good, and let's keep it going. Well, I said all I wanted to say for right now. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Rich Logis. Rich, what is new? Let us hear everything in the kitchen sink.
Hey, Michael. Good morning, Larkin. And Mark, hope you're having a great trip. Good morning to all of our listeners. And I'm actually, Michael, on that last point you made, I'm going to cite something that Larkin mentioned. It was last year, sometime last year. And the discussion, if you guys recall, it was not about government. It was about CEOs running companies, you know, executive leadership in companies. And Larkin had made a point about how if you have someone in leadership positions 15, 20 years in companies, you got to make a change. You got to make a change because you got to bring in new talents, right? Fresh blood, new eyes, new ears. Even if those execs had done a good job, right? It just, you've got to have that. I'm going through that right now in my own company, Michael, with RJL. We've been around 11 years, thank God. You know, it's up and down, but we've made a living. And we're bringing in some new talent into our company. We're going to have a new name. We're rebranding. We're remarketing. Why? Because it's time to adapt to the market. That's why I think I speak for Larkin on this, and I don't mean to speak for you, Larkin, but I believe that you're with me on this. This is why we're 1,000,000% in favor of term limits. And I understand that, in theory, Michael, term limits exist, right? There's an election, depending on the seat, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, whatever it may be. So I understand, in theory, there's term limits, but I think term limits is very much in alignment with what the founders envisioned for the Constitutional Republic, the experiment they created to see if the Homo sapiens who lived in the bordered United States of America could make the American freedom experiment work. And for the most part, Michael, we've made it work. But right now we're in a position where I think that for any of the old school Democrats who listen to our show, and we thank them for that, I have a hard time believing, Michael, I have a hard time believing that a Reagan Democrat or, you know, someone who identifies ideologically as a Democrat but understands that if reasonable people get together in a room, they can hash out a compromise, a solution. I got a hard time, I don't mean to speak for them, but I got a hard time believing that they're looking at what's happening right now and saying, wow, I'm so happy that my party has gone in this direction. I just have a hard time seeing that. And, you know, the question then becomes, whom exactly are the Democrats talking to, right? Like, what is the demographic? Like, Larkin, who are they talking? Who's their market? Who are they talking to right now? You know, when candidate Trump ran, I mean, he was talking, Michael, to a very large segment. And I just had this conversation yesterday because I'm collaborating with someone at the Rich Loja Show. And he asked me, he said, Rich, how did you know that we were going to win in 2016? I said, well, look, I'm not saying I knew for 100%, Michael, but I'm on record on this show saying that we would. I'm on public record saying it. And the reason I said it is because my political conversations were mostly with working families, small business owners, right? People who just want to enjoy their freedoms, Michael, and they just want to be left alone. Those people are what got us over the top in 2016, and those are the same Americans, I believe, not to sound overconfident, but I believe will get us over the top next year. And I just want to know, all these people on the debate stage, whom are they talking to? Like, whom do they think their market is? Because politics is selling, and they're not selling the Glengarry leads. I got to tell you that. They definitely ain't.
Well, Rich, I agree with you 100%. The big problem that we've had in America, and I'm going to ask Larkin to address this, is that the American people themselves sat back and didn't say much. They watched the jobs leaving. They watched the same old people being elected in Washington, in many state capitals, in many city council races, and they didn't say much. They didn't ask much in the way of a question as to what's happening. As a result, the people in Washington, the people in state capitals, thought they were doing a great job, and they continued business as usual. It took someone like our new president, Donald Trump, which I blame all that has happened in America on both sides of the aisle, because each party had their chance to have their say. They got in there. We had Clinton, we had Bush, we had Obama, and now we have Trump. Every one of them had the opportunity to do better for the American people, but they sat. But the saddest part of it, Rich, is the people who are on the stage now talking to us as potential candidates for president haven't talked about what they're going to help Americans do to earn a living. That's what this country was built on 243 years ago. People being able to rule themselves and earn their own living and pay the taxes to the country where they live, not to a foreign country. Right now, we are giving our jobs to the foreign countries. They are taxing us out of existence with all of their tariffs and everything else, bringing our stuff over. We were giving them tariff-free because, you know, they were emerging democracies and all this rigmarole. We had all these lobbyists on Capitol Hill. Why did this happen? A lot of it is because no term limits. Everybody just got comfortable. As Larkin said 1,000 times, the day after they're elected, they are back on the campaign trail to get their carcasses reelected in 2 years or 6 years, whatever it is. This is what happened in America. This is why a program like ours is not liked by many of the people in elected offices, because we are reminding a portion of the population that this is not the way to do business. We have to change this. If a person is doing a good job, you keep them. And by the way, those people in Washington, I want to know who in Washington can Rich Loges, Larkin Conley, Henry Chaplinsky, or anyone else point to right now that has been beating the drum for jobs, job skills, less welfare in this country for the last 20 years. Larkin, can you tell me who that person is?
I can't, Michael. You kind of caught me off guard. I was reading something in response to what I was going to say to Rich. He's 100% right. In the corporate world, in the nonprofit world, in the education world, no matter where you go, the only thing worse than no leadership is bad leadership or stale leadership.
Right.
And I can use as a specific example an organization that I've been involved with before that has the same individual as a CEO that they had 26 years ago. And this organization continually struggles to make its mark in the nonprofit world. It's just more of the swamp in Washington, D.C., and it's really too bad. But, you know, Mike, the truth of the story is, as of 2017, 40 million people, and that's about 12% of the population, earn less than the federal poverty line, which currently is $12,490 for a single person and $25,750 for a family of four. But almost no one actually lives on that. All but 3% of those people on below the poverty line collect welfare payments that lift them out of poverty. They depend on the government instead of depending on themselves. And right. that's where the problem lies. It's only 3% that live below poverty. And the other thing is, in our booming economy, this is a chance to turn all of that around and help the poor escape that dependency, to create sustainable, work-oriented programs that train people to be carpenters, plumbers, painters, to learn how to work. But let me ask you something. Why would you do that if the government's just going to pay you to stay home?
That's right.
And it's the old welfare question that we've been asking for decades and decades and decades. Employers are dropping the requirements like college and prior experience so that they can hire more people. And they're willing to train them to do their job. I've got working right next door to me three guys. I don't know much about their background, but they're on their hands and knees replacing sprinkler heads and doing plumbing work for the lady next door. And I went next door and I said, I want you to come over and do the same thing for me if you don't mind. My sprinkler system isn't working all that well, and I sure would love it if you'd come over and take a look at it and tell me what we need to do to make this work better. And he said, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I appreciate Sarah, my neighbor, for making the nice compliment that we're great workers, but I couldn't possibly come over and give you a price for the next month.
Yep.
I said, month? And he said, months. He said, I am booked solid. I have two full-day jobs that I'm doing today, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, because I've just got so much work. And I said, that's a compliment to you and your organization. If you've got that much work, it's because what you do is for a fair price. It's complete and professional. And he said, well, I appreciate that, but yeah. We pride ourselves in our work, and it's an employee kind of pseudo employee owned company. There are so many opportunities in this country to develop a sustainable future, to build on what is already a booming economy, to catch it in stride and run alongside of it. There's just no question of that, but the Democrats, my good fellow Democrats, in their debate the other day, that created what I call a freeloader free-for-all. It's an absolute free-for-all. I mean, people just scrambling to pick up buckets of money that, by the way, we have to go borrow to pay out. They talk about all of these programs, just an incredible amount of freeloading giveaways, and not once in the 2 days did they, A, talk about the national debt, I brought that up last week, and number two, not one of them addressed how you're going to pay for this. How do you pay for this? How do you pay for all of these giveaways? So, I guess my concern is that we have built such a freeloading society, a free-for-all, at the well of water and money that I'm not sure there's a significant percentage. 3%, heck, that's a lower percentage than the hardcore unemployed in this country.
Right.
That percentage of people that couldn't find a job if they wanted one because they're just not capable of working.
So, no skills. You know, as many, Larkin, as you know from being involved with job fairs and all, today the companies are coming and they're leaving at the end of the job fair disappointed because many of the people come, they have great resumes, but no actual hands-on skills. And with the way manufacturing is now improving in the country, and by the way, who in their right mind 20 years ago, 30 years ago plus, could have ever thought that America could exist without being a major manufacturing base? Everything that you have in your hands, in your house, is all manufactured by someone. Why can't it be at least manufactured 50% of the time in the USA? What major salesperson said that we have to go on this whole walk away from manufacturing because we're going to be better off doing other things? Where are those other things?
Well, Bruce Bassett Powell and I have an ongoing discussion. Bruce being a Brit, he's an American, but he's a British descent, and you can tell that in his speech. But Bruce is constantly concerned that America wants it all. And I keep on trying to stress to him, I would settle for 40%. Rich and you and Mark have talked about 50%. I'd settle for any significant uplift that would put our people back to work.
Larkin, and the reason I chose that 50% some years ago is I thought the scales of justice, you know how the scales are? At least if we're 50-50, we're okay. But 40% puts our end of the scale down. You know, we're not where we should be. So the 50-50 balance. And by the way, I want to tell you this, which is very good. I love to talk to tourists and the people who come to visit the center. And I will say this. I do ask them, what do they think about the candidates running? What do they think about our president? I don't get involved with particular names. And they just say, well, I want to tell you one thing. I see such a new, improved feeling in America. My son-in-law and my son are now fully employed. That's been a problem for a long time because they were in the technology end of their career. And with the technology, can you imagine inventing the products here and then taking everything over to a foreign country, all the technology, all the secrets, all the invention, everything to put it together, taking it over to a foreign country to be made. Case in point, everyone, is your cell phone. We all love our cell phones. Why aren't 50% of them made in America? Can you tell me that, Mr. Rich Loges? If 50% of them were made in America, look at how many additional jobs. And it's all technology. Why are people in foreign countries improving the technology that was originally started here in Texas and with Texas Instruments and all in the United States? Now, all of that technology, all those trade secrets, everything is now located offshore. Why is that, Rich?
Well, Mark has brought this point up before, how so many of what we invented is manufactured overseas. We're seeing some gains, though, Michael. The thing is that sometimes the singles, and I'm with Warren, let me just say, I'm with Warren actually when it comes to Made in America. I'm of the opinion that while I think, Michael, I have no disagreement whatsoever with you for striving for a number. You have to, when you can quantify something, it's best. But I'm also of the belief that, to Larkin's point, which is why I'm with him on this, that and I'm not a big baseball guy, our audio producer, our audio engineer, who, by the way, we've got to get him on board for 2020. He's a swing voter. in a swing state. Henry, we need your vote for 2020. You're a swing voter in a swing state. So we need you on next year. He's a baseball guy, and he can answer this. But if you really look at why the reason baseball, when you win a game, Michael, it's typically because of singles and doubles, right? I mean, I know that the grand slam to win the game will get you on SportsCenter, and it's a big highlight, and that happens from time to time. But when you really look at why the game is won, it's singles and doubles. And I think from our perspective now, we're starting to see that now. Like, we are starting to see singles and doubles, and I can give you some tangible proof of this. You know, look at take for example Mike Sessions. You know, Mike, how you doing? I know he's out in California. He's been such a great, devoted, loyal listener, and right there as a Made in America advocate. The show we're going to in October, Michael, I was just reading about it. I mean, there are expected to be thousands and thousands of attendees. It's not a small show. It's not a small show. And I credit guys like Mike and Mark Andel for, you know, like, let's make Made in America sexy again, right? Because that's now all of a sudden in the once you put it in front of the public and you got the right salespeople behind it to go and market Made in America, all of a sudden the public starts to say, yeah, you know, it makes more sense to buy Made in America. And then you just keep pushing, Michael, right? You just keep getting those singles and keeps getting those doubles. So we are really seeing the gains in it. And I do expect, if you look at the trajectory of everything, I really do expect we're going to keep seeing this going in the positive right direction.
I agree with you, Rich, and I want to say this too. I'm seeing, as I drive down the highways and the byways, I'm seeing many past factories that were downsizing. You could see they were, you know, going less and less trucks loading in the front on the loading docks. I'm seeing those facilities coming back to life. Industrial facilities that were vacant, this is another good thing. I see them painting up, fixing up, putting on new doors for the receiving. They're now coming back to life. Every one of those places means that some business is seeing that it's beneficial to do business in America. Why the hell didn't we do this 35 years ago? There's no reason for it. It's because the people in Washington got paid every week or every 2 weeks, however the government pays. But they didn't care about how their constituents were making a living or getting a paycheck. They just didn't care. And that's why we have this problem. They were fighting about idioticness. All you have to do is watch the morning news. Not one person talks about the great employment opportunities that have come about in America in the last few years, how unemployment is down, how jobs are relocating in America. People that were already considering to move out 3 and 5 years ago made their plans to move, stopped those plans, and are staying here in America. Does anyone on these morning shows or night shows bring that up? No, it's always the same crap. The dossier and all, that's past history. They're still talking about it. I don't understand it. They should be talking about the need for skilled workers, get our kids back to being who they are and who they should be, and let the kids find out what they would be best suited for in their life. Yes, Larkin.
So I just wanted to make a proposal. I am so delighted today that it's you and me and Rich, so that I can make this proposal. I can talk one-on-one to Rich, and we can lay out a plan. But I think I have a really profound proposal here. Rich, I would like you to be my campaign manager. I am running on the Democratic ticket for President of the United States.
Hey! Announcement. Very good, Larkin. I love it.
Yeah. So here's the deal. And it didn't take me a long time to figure this out. Bernie Sanders is raising money at a rate of $444,000 a day. He has raised over $18.2 million. Andrew Yang, who didn't say 15 words at the debate, has raised $1.7 million. Here's the deal. Rich, listen to me very carefully. There is no law anywhere that says these hundreds of millions of dollars that have been raised by these candidates have to be returned to anybody.
That's right, Larkin. Oh, you are so right.
Baby.
Those campaign war chests. Woo! They say they're held for a future run, a possible future run. And when that future run doesn't come about, guess who benefits?
Look at who's in the 1% now? Look at our my dear a friend from Massachusetts. Why can't I think of her name? I think
Warren.
I know why.
Yeah, Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren. She's right behind Bernie. I mean, these people have raised millions and millions and millions of dollars.
And Larkin, are they?
Only one of them is going to be the Democratic candidate. Only one of them is going to be the Democratic candidate. So it sounds to me like Bernie's going to be saying grace over a $18.2 million war chest that he is under no obligation to return to anybody.
Well, Larkin, let me just tell you this. This is really good. I've been out to various events where people are saying they are having an exploratory committee to see if they are going to want to run for this particular event or this particular position. They're having an event. The event is $500 or $1,000 for the candidate. And many times I see that the candidate doesn't run. And I often wonder, what happened to those 80 people that gave the $1,000 or 50 people that gave the $500? Where's that money going? The candidate decides one day it's announced, so-and-so will not seek that position. What happened to all that money?
Well, how about a brand new set of golf clubs?
There is no law, absolutely. And that's very good you brought that up, because most people don't know that. They do not understand that. And by the way, most of these exploratory committees, they're two people. That's it. So the two people are the campaign manager and the candidate, and they raise the money, and that's it. How is this going on? 18 million Bernie raised? Well, that should be a question that he has to be asked at some point. Not only him, everybody should be asked. Every candidate, Trump should be asked. How did you spend your money? How are you going to report? Now, by the way, everybody is saying, I'm not looking at these candidates at this point. I don't even want to hear about them. I will look at what's happening 1 year from now. I'm not interested in all the giveaways. Some people are very, very angry about some of the stuff being discussed that you'll get free tuition. How about those people who just graduated a year ago or 2 years ago, and their families helped them with tuition, paid their tuition? What are we supposed to do? Get retributions back? How are we going to do that? You know what I'm saying, Larkin? There's too many giveaways and no way to get it back. And by the way, I want to tell you something, too. If you're elderly in America and you are getting government assistance, especially if you are ill and very sick at the last years of your life, the government comes back to you for state recovery. In every state, they come back to you to recoup that money. However, in welfare, there's no recouping. How is that possible? Why is that like that? There should be a system where the people who go to welfare, just like in Europe, I just spoke to another radio broadcaster from another country, which most people will know, and said, the unemployment in our country is 90 days. And in 90 days, you better have a lot of interviews and you better have a lot of possibilities, because you're not getting renewed over and over again. Same thing with welfare. 60 days. In 60 days, they want to know, what have you done to get off welfare? If not, then you better have a good family or a lot of neighbors or a lot of people who want to come and donate food and everything else to you. In America, we just put the people on these programs to hide the fact that we do not have enough jobs anymore to keep people in America employed.
Michael, may I? May I come in?
Yes.
To Mark's point. Okay. You guys remember when I had invited on a former former official from the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, and we talked about money in politics. We talked about public financing of elections. You guys remember that a while ago? We did that.
Was that gentleman from Pennsylvania?
That's right.
I remember, yes.
And even if, Michael, even if I didn't necessarily agree with an issue, you know, like I always thought it was always best to, you know, have a discussion on there. You know, like we've talked about single payer on this show, right? And I brought it on to talk about it because it's still back in the news. And the problem, you know, not to go on this tangent, the Achilles heel of single payer is that while there's an emphasis on cost, as there should be, the actual real Achilles heel of single payer is in outcomes, right? Healthcare is really ultimately about the outcomes, and that's really the true chink in the armor with that. And then with public financing of elections, so just a few months ago, Larkin, Elizabeth Warren, whom you mentioned, I call her Fugazi Ahanas, Chief Crack-a-Beer. Remember, she did her little video. And she said, let me get a beer, Chief Crack-a-Beer, right? So she was on her social media a couple months ago, and she wrote, quote, and I'm quoting this, "Public financing of elections is the single best solution to reduce the undue influence of big money in our politics," end quote. Now, I don't know about you. See, I don't know about you guys, but $19 million, Larkin, and that sounds like big money to me. I know in the affluent, privileged Democrat world, because the great propaganda scam of all of this is that affluent white people predominantly vote Democrat. Now, look, I don't care, Michael. I don't hate on anyone's success. All right, I don't have that approach. There's no envy and jealousy in what I. If you're an affluent white Democrat, good for you. I don't begrudge your success. I'm just saying what the facts are, and those facts are actually. Those facts are actually backed up by public disclosures of net worth, public disclosure of who donates to whom. I'm not saying that affluent white people don't vote Republican and there are people who go both sides. You know, there's both sides of it. But when you really look at the majority of affluent people in America, their political party of choice is Democrats. So I want to know what part of the 19 million is not big money, Larkin. So it comes back to the point of this, Michael. Whether you think elections should be publicly financed or not, I'm of the opinion that they shouldn't be, and I have a variety of reasons why I think that. But none of these people up there, Elizabeth Warren doesn't believe the bull coming out of her mouth. Everyone knows that, right?
Yes.
She doesn't actually believe the bull coming out of her mouth right now. If Kamala Harris actually wanted, and Cory Booker, if they actually wanted financial reparations for slaves, Michael, there is nothing stopping them from creating a not-for-profit and then soliciting monies, voluntary contributions, not a PAC, it's not a political, it's a nonprofit. All the tax laws are in their favor. If Cuckoo Kamala Harris really wanted financial reparations for slaves, today she could create a Delaware-based company, nonprofit, that would solicit monies to give to the descendants of slaves. Nothing is stopping them. Why don't they do it? Because they don't actually believe the bull that comes out of their mouths, Michael.
You know, that's Rich, funny. That is a wonderful point. That is a very interesting point. I mean, everybody could be asking for some kind of reparation. If you think about it, I mean, there are people who have been thrown out of their houses because of eminent domain and had to, you know, go to another place where their mortgage doubled and all this and that. No, there are
okay.
a lot of people who should get
that,
reparations,
okay.
but let quick, it be quick, on quick a nonprofit comment. Level.
Quick comment on that. So Kamala Harris is now pitching a plan about public subsidizing for certain racial demographics to be able for them to go and buy homes. Does America understand, Larkin, that that's exactly what got us into the housing crisis to begin with? We are actually running, Michael, the play that has been proven to fail. We're running Russell Wilson throwing a pass at the one-inch line.
Yep.
That's what we're running. They're actually running, Michael, a play that has been proven to fail.
You're right. Absolutely. I agree.
How can anyone, again, like, I understand that there's certain parts of, look, the Republican Party, Michael, has a lot of problems in it. And the reason they've got a lot of problems in it is because along the way, Larkin, in the Trump era, the Republican Party has a problem with governing what was the majority at the time, right? So that was their issue. That's what they're trying to, you know, this is not President George W. Bush, and this isn't a Mitt Willard, right? You know, like, they're trying to keep up, and a lot of what we've gotten done, Michael, has been positive, right? We have, you know, our federal courts, our Supreme Courts, tax reform, we've had wins. Like, we've had actual real wins, and that was driven by Republican leadership, people like Mitch McConnell, whom I'm not always the biggest fan of, but they got stuff done. They did get stuff done that were promises that were made. And I think that a lot of these Republican lawmakers, I actually do think this, Larkin, and maybe this is my naivete speaking, but I actually think a lot of them would like to be able to resolve some of these. Like, you look at some of these big issues, Michael, we've got coming up, like immigration as an example. The Supreme Court is going to hear DACA cases. And the Supreme Court, this is going to be next year, the Supreme Court is going to finally decide whether DACA, by executive order, is constitutional or not. And the Democrats are going to lose that battle. They're not going to win. So my plea to the Democrats is, let's not get to the Supreme Court. Let's actually get this issue resolved. And the way we're going to get it resolved is we will make it so, Michael, so people can have an actual pathway to citizenship. Not now, right? You got to wait 10 years.
10 years, right.
And you got to wait 10 years. We're going to build a wall. We're going to build the wall. We're going to give you 10 years. But then we're going to do away with some of the silly stuff like the chain migration. Look, if your immediate family comes in, I'm okay with that. But your uncle's brother's half gay cousin, you know, who's a cultural Muslim atheist, he doesn't need to come. And we need to do away with the diversity lottery, because being from Timbuktu is not a skill or an achievement. Let's get that done. Like, let's actually get that done. And I think, Larkin, there are a lot of GOPers who would do it. But we're at the point now, Michael, where, like, the election, all the election is going to do is just going to show how far apart we all are. And the only way to get a remedy, unfortunately, this is the, in my opinion, the only way to really get a remedy is that politically speaking, you know, legislatively speaking, one side's gotta conquer the other, because we're not even in the same hemisphere right now when it comes to issues of national security, border security, working. How many times, Larkin, in these so-called debates, I call them so-called debates because they all peddle the same narratives. It's like the Jim Jones cult drinking the flavor aid up there. How many times was there really a discussion about small business owners, the people you advise, like actually working families, people who work, right? Just normal people, they work. Who are they talking to up there? Tell me.
That 12%, I guess. I don't know, but I keep on hearing how egregiously poor we treat our middle class and the poor in this country, yet I don't see any programs that are suggested by anybody in Washington, D.C. that creates a sustainable future in this country. Nobody. Excuse me. It's like those CEOs of major corporations whose long-term vision is the end of next quarter. That's all they care about, because these egregious amounts of money that they're given in bonuses are based on current earnings. What can you do for me today? Nobody sits there and says, if we want to be a strong company, or a strong organization or a strong country in 15, 20 years, we need to do this.
That's right. And no one has suggested it. No one.
Nope.
In fact, you know what, Larkin, you know what I'd like to see? All the candidates, including President Trump, make a pledge that they are going to do even more for bringing jobs to America, to review what's going on in America's schools. If they did that, we would have a lot of peace in this country. Larkin, if you're serious and you'd like to run for president, I have a few people that would be really happy to promote you. And I think you could raise a good amount of money. You could sell, you know, yourself very well. I mean, you've done great in life. Why couldn't you be a candidate for president? In fact, at this point, I think we should get as many people on the both Republican and the Democratic side and the independent side. Let everybody possible who's unemployed or whatever, let them run for president. Rich, how old do you have to be to put your name in for president?
35, and you know what? Maybe Larkin could team up with, which I don't mean to speak for you, Larkin, but maybe Larkin could team up with Howard Schultz, the chairman of Starbucks, and their campaign slogan could be coffee and whiskey. 2020. Coffee and whiskey, yeah. 2020.
Is Schultz the guy that has the whiskey end of that, or is that Larkin? I'm confused.
So I have to tell you that I don't think I could really pull this off. I was really kind of being facetious. But the last time that I walked in to a room full of Democrats, I went into epileptic shock. I mean, I fell to the ground and started rolling around. I was foaming at the mouth, and I itched all over. So I couldn't. There's no way. If you sent me to a Democratic convention, I'd probably blow up. There's no way. I can't be, I can't be in a room full of that many dreamers, of that many people who completely and totally disrespect the sustainability of our economy and that don't want to give things away.
But see, Larkin, I agree 1,000% with you, but this is another problem. Why the American business people, why the American public allowed this to happen? Why aren't they questioning all the candidates? Why aren't they sending notes to President Trump? Put in your ideas and put them on, document them on the internet. So let's see. I'd like to see what all these candidates have to say. Not only the hot air coming out of their mouth, put it in writing. When you put something in writing, you really like have to look at it to say, do I really want to put that in writing as coming from me? But they don't want to put it in writing. They get up there and we're going to do this. We're going to do this. But how are we going to do it? Give us a 3-point plan how it's going to happen.
Well, we have to control immigration. That's the first thing out of the box. I understand the climate warming and I hear the people running around my neighborhood screaming, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. I've heard all of that. But, who's going to give a damn if the planet survives if we have no civilization? Won't make any difference. Anyway, so, and I think Rich has taken a really good swat at immigration and the fact that Congress has to do something. Both sides have to give a little bit. We have to put the people that are here on a sustainable or on a long-term path to citizenship, and I just can't imagine allowing this to occur for another year or two at the rate that our borders are being assaulted by people who
has to be Larkin. It has to be ended immediately. Has to be ended immediately. I think that the whole 535 elected leaders in Congress, at the Senate and the House, should all be taken down to the border and hold a day of Congress there at the border and see what they would like to have changed. When they say, when one or two goes down there and they have the reporters and all, it's insane. I think all the people should be there and then let 535 people come back and offer an opinion. My opinion is...
That's what makes But that, excuse me, that's what makes this issue, though. This is what makes this issue. So I'm going to sound like my Catholic upbringing here, but it's sinful the way we handle this issue.
It is sinful. It's abusing life. It's abusing people.
First of all, and forgive my cynicism, but the Democrat so-called leaders in Congress don't care about these kids. If the Democrat media industrial complex and these Dems actually cared about these kids, Michael, they would all be front and center saying and wondering aloud, why are so many people fleeing these cities, Michael, south of our border, in North America, South, Central, Latin America? All the out-of-control corruption, the rampant crime, the gangs, the fourth-world squalor and poverty. Because it sounds a lot like, well, the cities that Dems run, doesn't it? So you're not going to, like, expose yourself. You're not going to do that. This is an issue, Michael, that has... First of all, national security is the number one responsibility of a lawmaker, to keep people safe and secure, more than any other issue.
Right.
And we're not having policy differences. We're having utter and abject failures. There are reports about congresswomen in Texas, you guys hear about this, who have sent staff to Mexico to coach people on how to make asylum claims.
What to say, right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly
that
right.
That right there is treason.
That's right.
That's actual. Now, I may not, maybe in a court of law, I couldn't prove it. That is actual treason, because when you go and sit down to take your oath, you take an oath to the, it's not just to your district, it's to the Americans, to the country. And your first obligation is safety and security. And trust me when I tell you, Michael, the GOP hasn't been great on this either.
No, but Richard, this is a Democrat and Republican
bipartisan problem.
Absolutely. First of all, here is the thing that really angers me when I get started discussing this with people. They say, it should be this, it should be that. I said, yes, you're absolutely correct. I have seen all these reports where these great leaders of Congress on both sides of the aisle have gone down and said, they said, remember, breath is one thing, documenting something is a second thing. They said all this, it should be that. Where are the solutions documented? Do you have any of those solutions, Larkin or Rich? Is anything documented? Number one, this is what has to be done. Number two, this is what could be done. This is what must be done. Nothing. It's talk. It's all breath. Breath means nothing in this case. We want documented solutions. When someone comes in to talk about a human service problem with me, I give them documented solutions. This is the path you must follow in order for you to be assisted. If you don't follow that path, you're not going to do it. People come in and say, I'm looking for a job. When was the last time you had a job? 2 years ago. What have you been doing in the last 2 years? I've been getting by. What the hell does that mean? I've been getting by. Exactly what does that mean? Have you been bilking your parents? Have you been doing what? But, you know, I want things documented. And then when I tell them, I'm sorry, I can't help you because you don't have anything that I can present to somebody to help you with, they get all upset. Oh, you know, I don't understand why. I thought this was a social service agency. It is, but we follow rules. That's one thing our Congress is not following. They're not following the rule and the regulations that they put into effect in 1996, and they were filed, and they were also signed into law by President Clinton. Those laws on the southern border have not been obeyed. And if anyone can tell me why, send me that note immediately to michael@americanworkersradio.com, and I'll be happy to read your comment. And if you can also send me a list of the people that you know that have been promoting jobs, job skills, changing our schools to bring technology, bring the trades back, send me that national leader, and I'll be happy to announce them next week. The mailing address or the email address is michael@americanworkersradio.com. Yes.
Yeah, that would. I'm going to be interested in seeing the kind of suggestions that you receive.
You know,
I'm also going to say, listen, we've got Nancy Pelosi telling everybody that she wants open borders, that she wants anybody that wants to come into this country is welcome to come into this country, and at the same time suggesting that Medicaid and Medicare need to be given to anybody that lives in this country, citizen or not, which just aggravates me so far.
Larkin, I'm going to give a little advice to Nancy Pelosi and to every elected official that thinks that. I suggest that Nancy Pelosi go and take a tour of California. Can you tell me why so many of the homeless are laying on the streets of California? How is that possible? Where is her representation? Why isn't that being discussed? Why can you only hear it on 60 Minutes or 2020 or wherever? Why is that not on the top of the agenda? Bring more people to this country when we can't have the people in this country housed and properly employed. That's the bottom line.
So, you know, they report that Nancy Pelosi is worth $29 million. But that, combined with her husband, she's worth about $202 million.
Well, apparently she doesn't share those dollars with the people in California. She should be out there looking at the homeless situation. And I don't care if she was Democrat or Republican. I believe every one of the national elected leaders should be out in their communities seeing the poverty and suffering of their constituents. Ladies and gentlemen, I thought we had a good conversation today. Remember, I'm urging you to go out and support your local businesses. They are depending on you. They employ over 60 million Americans across the USA. Please go out of your way to help them. Larkin, if you still want to run for president, we want to know about it. Rich, if you decide this may be a nice money grab, we could have Logis for president, Larkin for president. Let's see what we can do. We can all take a little stockpile in this whole gig. But anyways, it was a great conversation today. Our thanks to Larkin Conley and Mark Andel, our engineer Henry Chaplinsky. Kindly spread the word. Send out a copy of our broadcast to your family and friends today. Let's keep this thing moving. God bless you, and may God bless America.
Thanks, everyone.